or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. Now here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
Today, we'll discuss workplace issues at the Social Security Administration with leaders from AFGE's SSA General Committee, Council 224 President Earl Tucker from the Office of Quality Performance, Council 215 President Jim Marshall from the Office of Disability and Adjudication Review, Council 220 President Witold Skwierczynski from Field Operations, and Council 109 President Agatha Joseph from Program Service Centers. We've been joined by Earl Tucker, President of AFGE Council 224 in the Office of Quality Performance at the Social Security Administration. Earl, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
So we're here today at SSA headquarters, and you've had some meetings that you were involved with management today. Tell us about those meetings.
Thank you. Yeah, I've met with my component associate. My component associate is the Deputy Commissioner for the Office of Quality Performance. And in that meeting today, we talked about lots of issues affecting employees in our component. And one of the main issues that we discussed today was the ratio of employees to supervisors, to management. And the ratio is very, very high. We have the ratio runs from a ratio of 1.8 employees to one supervisor to has a ratio of one supervisor to 3.5 employees. So as a result of these high ratios, we have less employees, less people available to do work on the front line. If we had less supervisors, less managers, we would have more employees doing frontline work. We are sort of, if you were fighting a war, you would really won't put resources on the front line to get the work accomplished. But in our component, there's more emphasis on having managers available to manage, more so than have employees who do the actual casework with respect to disability, with respect to retirement, and with respect to SSI. So we really try to emphasize with our meeting today that we need employees on the front line. And if we change those ratios of employees to supervisors, the supervisor employee to management, we that could relieve some of the stress that we're facing because there's a push for productivity, and that creates stress for our employees, and we need some relief in that area to give the employees help to get the work done, especially on the front line. If we do something about the ratio, because we have less work assigned to the employees, and that would cause employees to really not have to focus on quantity, and they could focus more on quality of the work. And our job, our office is called the Office of Quality Performance, but it's beginning to become the Office of Quantity Performance, which is not good, because when you're reviewing the quality of the agency, you want to make sure the employees have the adequate time to do a quality job.
Yeah. What should the ratios be to achieve the office's mission?
The ratio should be at least 1 to 15 or 1 to 20. When you look at the past ratios going back many years, it was 1 to 15 or 1 to 20, the ratio of employees to supervisors. And now it's creeped up, whereas we have 1 to 1.8 to 1 to 3.5 ratio in my component. So the average is about 3 to 1 or 2.5 to 1 ratio in our component. But the ratio should be much higher. It should be at least 1 to 15 or 1 to 20.
There's a significant difference between a ratio of 1.8 or 3.5 to 1 versus 15 to 1 or 20 to 1. What does this ratio do to the morale of your office?
It really creates a real serious problem. We have an environment where we see a country club atmosphere. The people who are called program leads or team leaders, they don't have a lot of work pressures that we have as employees because they're considered managers. Although they don't perform any managerial duties whatsoever, they seem like they're in a country club atmosphere, and it creates a very, very bad morale problem for the bargaining unit because they know the stress that they're under, but when they look at the program leaders or the team leaders, they're not having the same pressure. So we call them the country club group, and that really has a bad negative effect on our employees, and it really creates a serious problem, and we need to reduce those ratios so that these individuals who are in the country club can start feeling start performing some of the work on the front line, and that will really enhance our work that we do for the public.
So you're calling on the office to essentially spread the work more equitably among all of the employees.
I call it stuff. You know, we don't know what they do. These managers, these team leaders, because they don't have a full caseload. They do work some cases, but they seem like the cream of the crop, the cases that are easy to work and not time-consuming, and you have to do lots of research on those type cases. So it seems to me that that what they do with most of their time is just doing paperwork and reports, which are unnecessary in our opinion. But it's an area where the people who are program leaders or team leaders, they enjoy being in that position because they don't have the pressure and the stress that we are faced with.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Earl Tucker, president of AFGE Council 224 of the SSA's Office of Quality Performance. Earl, is management receptive to making a change to spreading this work around a little more evenly or reclassifying some managers to put them on the front line, perhaps?
I did hear one thing very encouraging today. They have designated one of the top managers to look at work assignments, and they're going to look at work assignments, and they did make a commitment that they're going to make work assignments consistent, you know, because we have situation where we do the same job, but in some offices you assign, you know, a high workload, and then in another office you assign less cases. I think in some offices we get, you know, assigned as many as 14 cases, in other offices we get assigned 8 cases per day. And they said that they would look at making a consistent assignment of work. So that was encouraging when I heard that they have appointed a high-level official to look at case assignment, and the purpose of what they would be looking for is to make sure that the work assignment would be consistent. They say it may not be consistent numbers, but it would be consistent on how they assign the cases. It'd be a consistent procedure. So that was encouraging when I heard that from them today.
And so do you think then that would improve the morale perhaps of the membership that you work with on a day-to-day basis?
Definitely, because you know, once employees feel that they've been treated fairly and equitably, it would definitely improve their morale.
And so in the Office of Quality Performance, what are some other issues that you're keying on right now as you talk to management and work through some of these things?
Okay. We're keying in on other issues with respect to the overtime. You know, we've gotten used to overtime, but lots of our members have put that in their budget, their family budgets. Overtime, the money for they get from overtime, because in the past we've had consistent overtime every Saturday, 8 hours in all of our offices basically, but in March, no overtime. They completely stopped all overtime. So we talked about overtime allocations today, and they said that they would be spending all the overtime that they've got. They've got new allocations. They haven't allocated it out to the field yet, but they have gotten new allocations for overtime. And so that was encouraging to know that they will be allocating all the overtime that they've gotten recently. So that's going to be helpful to our members, because they will be at some point in the future working overtime, but it may not be 8 hours on Saturdays, but we will have some overtime hours in the future.
And what was the reason for this abrupt stop in the overtime in March?
There was talk about furloughing employees, and we didn't have a budget. So as a result of not having a budget, the agency felt obligated that they had to stop spending some kind of way, and reduce spending some kind of way. And so the first thing that they did was basically to cut overtime.
How do the employees feel about the overtime situation? I imagine that in this day and age, when we're going through pay freezes and cuts and cutting back, that is this something? Is overtime something that the employees enjoy, or is it just almost a necessity at this point?
You know, with gas prices the way they are now, employees need the overtime. It's a necessity. And granted, all employees do not work overtime in my component, but quite a few will work overtime. So it's really important that we do have overtime, and we're glad to know that we will be getting overtime at some point in the future. But it is a very, very big need for the employees in my component to have additional funds that they get from the overtime work. But it's really service to the public that employees feel that they're providing, because with the work sitting there, you know, not the where the public is not being paid, because we haven't looked at that case. So it's really a way to give the public better service, because we will be getting overtime to get those cases that are not being paid. Get the public paid on those cases that are not being worked because we didn't have the overtime.
Shifting gears for a minute, Earl, we understand that there are some inconsistent variable allowance rates from state to state in your office. Can you explain that and how that works?
Yes. As I mentioned earlier, we review the disability. We do all the disability reviews for the state agencies. There are 54 different state agencies, and we review all the state allowance rates. As a result, the allowance rates vary from state to state. There's no consistency in the allowance rates. If you live in New Hampshire, you know, the allowance rate is as high as 60%. However, if you live in Tennessee, if you happen to reside in Tennessee, the allowance rate for disability is as low as 22%. So that shouldn't be. You know, we know there's going to be some variances. It should be no more than 5 to 10%. But when you have a variance from about 38% or 40%, that something's wrong there. So that's something else we talked about today, is that the difference in allowance rates. So the agency is supposed to take another look at see where why there's such an inconsistency. We did a study back in 2005, and we found out that this is really a problem. But we've not been able to close the gap on the different allowance rates from state to state. But there is a serious problem with the allowance rates from one state to another state.
Are you comfortable with management's response on that and trying to look into it and make those rates a little bit more even?
Yeah, I'm comfortable with their response, but I'm not going to be fully satisfied until I see some changes. I haven't seen any changes recently, and we've been reviewing these programs for years and years, especially since 1980. And the allowance, there have been differences in allowances. If you're in a low income state, say like Tennessee, the very low-income state, you find that you get denied quite heavily. But you live in New Hampshire, you know, the allowances, there's a big difference in the allowance rates in New Hampshire. It's given that you get it allowed quicker. But I'm not happy with the response until I see some changes in those numbers.
Earl Tucker, president of AFGE Council 224 in the Office of Quality Performance at SSA. Thank you so much for your time, Earl.
You're quite welcome.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next we'll learn more about workplace issues at SSA with AFGE Council 215 President Jim Marshall from the Office of Disability and Adjudication Review.
Attention, AFGE members, government and military employees. Looking for a hassle-free way to buy a new computer, electronics, or home appliances? Purchasing Power allows you to get items such as Dell laptops, HP desktops, and Kenmore appliances through easy payroll deduction. There's no upfront cash required, no credit checks, and AFGE members get a 6% discount. Get started today. Log on to shoppurchasingpower.com. That's shoppurchasingpower.com.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. Call the AFGE Benefits Line at 1-888-844-2343 today to see how much you could save. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Jim Marshall of the Office of Disability and Adjudication Review and president of AFGE Council 215. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So we've got you here today at SSA headquarters. You've met with management on a couple of issues today. Tell us how your meetings went.
It was a very interesting meeting. I met with the Assistant Deputy Commissioner Borland for the Office of Disability Adjudication Review. What we discussed was management's actions towards the older workers during the past 3 years. Specifically, my component has had a massive hiring of young employees because of stimulus money. And as a result of the recession and the number of hires, they've been able to recruit excellent candidates for all types of positions. And what I mean by that is well-educated employees for lower graded positions. So we hired a lot of people, master's degrees, law degrees in the lower graded positions, grades 4, 5s, and 6s. Now the agency has been looking at ways to retain these people once the recession lifts, so we will not lose them. So what they've done pretty much uniformly across the country is taking the older worker that's close to retirement or retirement eligible at the time and put quite a bit of stress on them with production goals, quality goals, putting them on performance plans. And as a result, we're seeing these individuals retiring. Then the agency turns around, re-advertises the higher graded positions from these employees and picking up these lower graded employees under the stimulus money without promoting the people that's been around stagnated in grade for 15, 20 years. I made a big issue of this because the people that's carried this agency through for 25 years with the sweat of their brow, in my opinion, is totally discriminated against. Now, he wanted me to put forth statistical data on that, and I told him he had the data. All he had to do is look at the number of employees that have left the agency for any number of reasons, whether it's been termination due to disciplinary actions because they weren't producing or retire early, and who they hired to replace them, and the data will speak for itself. And he indicated he would do that, whether he does or not, I'm not sure, but it's an issue I'm going to stay with and fight for the benefit of our employees. In addition, we tried to address this massive backlog we have. The commissioner several years ago committed to Congress that the primary goal of SSA was to reduce the disability backlog to a working amount by the time his term ended in January 2013, and we were heading that way until we got into the recession, which increased the workload. Then they went out and they took positions from other components, FTEs, and they shifted them over to my component and did more hiring of administrative law judges, attorneys, etc. We've had massive hiring. Now, from the statistical data, I see they're on target to hit their goal, absent funding for next year. If the budget shortfalls comes, we could very well revert back 2 years ago, and claimants will be waiting 2, 3, 4 years for their appeal processes on disability claims. So unless Congress does something to fund this program, we're going to be back, and we've wasted millions and millions of dollars for naught.
Jim, talk about the impact that this backlog has on the services and the people who rely on them.
Well, primarily, right now, we have a backlog of about 725,000 disability claims pending waiting hearings for administrative law judges. Each one of these individuals have been out of work from anywhere from 6 months, year, 2 years. They file their request for a hearing, and they're waiting on the norm 9 months to a year and a half to have a hearing. During this entire time, they're without funds, most of them. They're relying on their savings, or they're relying on state welfare to keep them in existence. They lose their homes. A lot of times, distress causes breakup in their marriages. So it's all kind of consequences because of this backlog. And I'm not quite sure the commissioner's approach is even in the ballpark to get rid of it, because I've made numerous suggestions on increasing the productions of processing cases, which has been for naught. I suggested that we could create a junior paralegal position, which could eliminate an additional 50 to 60,000 cases more per year without any increase in staffing. It was rejected.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Jim Marshall from the SSA's Office of Disability Adjudication and Review and president of AFGE Council 215. Jim, this situation is equally as hard on the employees too, correct?
Yes. It's very stressful because with the increased number of cases coming into the office, we work under what management puts out is a fair share work. And what their definition of a fair share work is, if you get 400 cases in a week and you divide it by the number of employees, that is your fair share. And as anybody knows, everybody works at different paces. You have some outstanding employees, and you have some employees that put in 8 hours of hard work and not do quite as much work as another employee. And you'll have some that's slower just because of the nature of the work. But management does not wish to hear the differences between employees' abilities, because their goal is everyone should do X number of claims per week or per month. And this has caused tremendous stress on individuals. And I think this could probably lead to many of them early retirement this year, because I'm hearing more and more employees saying they've had enough, they're going to bail out.
And with that, if you had a large number of people who retired, you'd be losing a wealth of information as well, right?
Yes. Right now in our Falls Church Appeals Division, approximately 50% of the employees are retirement eligible. That means today they could say goodbye and leave. If that would happen and they recruited new employees, it would take approximately 2 years for a new employee to become proficient enough to take on the work of the employee's loss. So you'd have a 2-year lapse in the ability to process claims.
I want to come back to what you started the interview with and this hiring wave of younger people, which on the front end seems good. That seems good to get people, young people working and involved in federal service, but it almost seems as though the agency is doing it at the expense of the older workers, making it almost a zero-sum game.
Yes, that's exactly what they're doing. They're hoping to retain these younger workers. It's my belief that once the recession goes by the wayside and employment opens up outside, we will lose 90% of our hires. Because I'll give you an example. We hired approximately 800 attorneys, and I hear from quite a few of them, they do not like to sit in a cubicle and work with a computer writing decisions. They much prefer practicing law, what they went to school for. So once the working conditions on the outside open up, we anticipate a lot of these individuals will go to law firms or go into private practices rather than stay there, because there's no future. Once they hit a certain grade level, they will remain primarily in that grade level, which is a grade 12, for the rest of their career, and they'll continue to do the same work.
We know that there's an intense budget debate on Capitol Hill, and a lot of suggestions about cutting services. Who is with you in this fight to make sure that SSA runs the way that it's designed to run?
Well, our national office, AFGE, the AFL-CIO, many different groups throughout the country are supporting Social Security receiving appropriate funding so we can do our job. I have worked for this agency for 53 years. I've seen a lot of changes, and this is the worst I've seen this agency in my entire time. And a lot of it has to do with the way of its leadership, and namely Commissioner Astru. I think he rules this agency with a grip for fear towards employees, and he treats us like slaves.
So you've been with SSA for more than five decades, and you're saying that this is the worst that you've ever seen it.
Yes.
How does that make you feel? When you leave the office at night and you go home, how do you feel?
I can't wait to get back the next morning to continue my fight for the benefit of the employees I represent. And also, as a taxpayer, I feel like I should accomplish something to help the deserving people that we serve. And I think it's an absolute sin that Congress allows this leadership to continue.
Jim Marshall from the SSA's Office of Disability Adjudication and Review and president of AFGE Council 215. Thank you very much for your time today.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll learn more about workplace issues at SSA with AFGE Council 220 President Witold Skwierczynski from Field Operations.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Witold Skwierczynski, president of AFGE's Council 220 Field Operations Locals. Witold, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be back, Jason.
So you have been in some intense negotiations with SSA management over a number of key issues. Give us an update.
Our contract negotiations are going nowhere fast. We just can't seem – we reached an agreement on some minor issues a couple of months ago, but again, we have run into roadblocks. The agency has not been willing to, we think, negotiate in good faith with us on issues that we've presented before them. We've surveyed our employees and got a list of issues that they're most concerned about. Many of them revolve around issues of health and safety, stress, worksite working conditions, benefits such as work at home, flexi place, the kind of hours of work, flex time that they work, and other issues that are of interest to the employees. And we've presented proposals regarding those issues, and the agency has been rigid in their attitude about not wanting any progressive changes. I know the previous interviewee, Mr. Marshall, had some criticism over the commissioner. I think he is at fault at not sending a message to his bargaining team that, you know, it's time to loosen up in the bargaining process. I mean, we've been at the table for 16 months now and made negligible progress. And it's our belief within the union that we're going to make a last attempt here in the next couple bargaining sessions to try to get to our bottom line positions. And if we are unsuccessful in getting any movement, we'll be considering looking for third-party assistance.
16 months is quite a while. At some point, you'd think enough is enough, right?
Enough is enough. I mean, in the last contract, we took some hits, and we have some real problematic language in our contract on issues that are a big concern to the employees, like our appraisal system and the merit promotion system, and in the health and safety area. And employees were very upset with the results of that. That was under difficult times under the Bush administration when we were negotiating our last contract. And it was, you know, we think that it's important to have a fair appraisal system, a fair merit promotion system, a good system for FlexiPlace, which the president actually is endorsing, that all federal agencies maximize the use of FlexiPlace for their workers. And we just don't see this administration in Social Security as being eager to reach agreement in these areas.
You indicated that you were having some trouble getting through to management on health and safety issues. Do you question management's commitment to providing employees a safe place to work?
Well, I can't. You know, I can't. I don't know what they're thinking. I just know what they're saying. And we've, in the field, a big issue lately has been the number of threats and the number of actual assaults that have occurred in our field offices, not only in our field offices, but also in our hearings offices. And we've had seen the statistics lately from the increase in the number of incidents from 2007 to present is almost doubled. And these are members of the public who come in and you know, under the tough economic conditions we have, a lot of folks are stressed out, and they take it out on our workers, which isn't acceptable from our perspective. And we've asked for additional security guards. We've asked for guaranteed separation, front-end interviewing areas where the area where people are interviewed are separated from the rest of the office, so that our employees who aren't interviewing have some guarantee of protection. And we've asked for metal detectors, and searching of packages when people come into the offices. And we haven't gotten that. Most government agencies have that. You go into a government agency and there's you know, a metal detector or a magnetometer where people go through a screening device. We don't have that in virtually any of our field offices. Unless they're in a federal building, we actually don't have that. So we have a lot of people walking in armed with weapons. We have a lot of people coming in with packages. We don't know what's in them, a backpack or a purse. And if you're in a normal public federal employee office, federal office with federal employees in it, you'd catch that stuff through the metal detector or magnetometer. In Social Security offices, that isn't happening. So we've demanded that they have extra protection. And the sad part about it is, what Congress is doing with our budget, we got cut over $1 billion from the president's request for fiscal year 11 with this recent budget deal in Congress, is things like security are things that they can't afford. You know, increased security is difficult to afford. The agency has to make choices on whether we're going to have staff or whether they're going to have security. And that's a sad situation. I mean, we're not, the security that we need in our offices is not only for the employees, but it's for the public that comes in. And the public that visits Social Security offices are a vulnerable public. They're disabled people and senior citizens. So if you don't have adequate security and in those offices, it not only is a threat to the health and safety of the workers, but also the public. And I'm telling you, there have been a lot of incidents lately involving guns, involving fist fights with employees and security guards, involving threats of bombing or burning down our offices. And these are real threats. Now, some of them, you know, a lot of this stuff doesn't materialize, but it might. And we've had incidents, and the incidents have doubled, and we don't see a lot of relief in terms of security. I must say, though, the new deputy commissioner, Carolyn Colvin, who was confirmed by Congress in December, did one of her first acts was to set up a security conference where we could at least have a dialogue about the issues that we need to look at in terms of improving security in the workforce. And so we're starting that dialogue. But this budget problem raises a lot of issues, not only in our ability to do work that the American public expects from us, but also in order to have secure work sites.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Witold Skwierczynski, president of AFGE's Council 220 Field Operations Locals. Witold, what you're describing sounds strikingly similar to what Mr. Marshall said earlier. This is almost like a zero-sum game. You're either going to staff accordingly or you're going to provide adequate security. At some point there, somebody loses.
Well, a lot of people are losing. I mean, the kind of discussions we've had with the agency the last two days are sad, and they're all budget-related. You know, Congress slashed our budget, the budget request that Obama made. We have expanding workloads because of the baby boomer generation coming of age, coming of retirement age, and also because of the economic downturn, which is causing more people to file for Social Security retirement and disability benefits. And at the same time, because of the budget that was passed, the agency has implemented a hiring freeze in all parts of the agency except for our hearings and appeals division. And that means we're getting less and less staff. The staff cuts are uneven. They're just not replacing people who leave. So, if, you know, you got a field office in Chicago might lose two people, but a field office here in Baltimore it might lose 10. They can't replace either. So there's no way of having an even level of staffing, and that's adversely affecting the public. We spent 2 days talking about what we may not do in the future, workloads which Congress is demanding that the agency's contemplating not doing because they don't have the money. And that's a sad state of affairs, that Congress passes laws providing for benefits and oversight activity by the Social Security Administration employees, and the agency's actually having discussions with us on things that they can't do because they can't afford.
Where does AFGE go from here? I mean, this is a daunting situation. You're talking about expanding workloads, losing staff, not being able to replace them. This is almost like a levee that's about to break.
You're right. And what we have to do and what we're trying to do is to inform the public and to talk to Congress on both the House and the Senate side and tell them what the impact of the budget cuts that they're proposing will have on the Social Security Administration and the impact it'll have on the general public. We've had two sets of rallies now in March and April. The March rallies were before 96 employees went out, and our allies from constituent groups came out in 96 offices. The last set of rallies, over 80 offices. We had informational picketing, trying to inform the public and the press about what's going on in Social Security and what the effect of the budget cuts will have. We have to continue doing that, continue informing the public. The sad part about this is whatever side of the fence you're on, Democrat or Republican, if you decide that the government should exist in certain areas like Social Security, fund it properly. Don't have an agency that everyone agrees is important to the American public and underfund them so they can't provide the services that the American public deserves. People pay into Social Security. They pay their taxes to the agency. They should deserve benefits and efficient service when they claim them. And what's happening with these budgets, with this budget, is that's not going to happen because we're going to be underfunded and we can't provide services to a significant part of the population that needs it.
Do you find when you talk to people around the country that they're responding to you, that they understand that these services that are on the line, they're going to impact you?
People do respond, especially when we're out doing an informational picket and somebody's walking into a Social Security office to get their service. They read our flyers. They react favorably to what we're saying. The trick is to get the public to talk to their congressmen, to talk to their senators, and to demand that Social Security is fully funded.
You indicated that the agency took about a $1 billion hit for its funding in fiscal year 2011. What does 2012 hold?
Well, it looks pretty bad. The Republicans passed a budget that would put the whole government back at 2008 staffing levels. Now, 2008 staffing levels compared with before our budget freeze would put us at about 6,800 full-time equivalent less than what we had. Now, that's like telling 7,000 employees to just leave. Now, we were under the threat of close to having furloughs just a month ago, and the budget negotiations provided enough money to just stave that off. But the agency has done things such as do a staffing freeze. They've cut they eliminated overtime for a while, a little bit back now. And they've done things which are really against the law. I mean, for instance, Astru said, we're not going to send out wage and benefit statements to people anymore to give them an idea of, just so they compare their wages to what Social Security, to their own records, and to also look at a benefit estimate that they might get when they retired. He's eliminated that, thinking that's going to save $70 million a year. Well, the law says you have to send them out. So he's making decisions to violate the law because the agency, in his view, doesn't have the money to spend it. Now, that's a dangerous situation to enter when you have government agencies deciding to not to follow the law because they don't have enough money appropriated from Congress to do that. I don't think they can, but that's the situation we find ourselves, where government agencies are deciding to not follow the law because Congress hasn't budgeted enough funds to do it.
Those are those pieces of paper that every American gets.
Every wage earner gets every year.
Once a year, it tells them where they stand, how much they've made this year, years past.
Allows them to plan for retirement. Somebody who's younger, even our younger generation, can look at that and say, well, here's the kind of things that I need to do to save money or to invest money or to spend money in a certain way so that I can be secure in my retirement, because I know I'm going to get X amount of retirement money based on this statement that I'm getting on a yearly basis. So it allows people to plan for their retirement, and it allows people to check on whether they're getting credited by Social Security with their accurate earnings, because it tells you how much money you've earned according to Social Security each year. So if there's a mistake, you can call up the agency and have it corrected. That's been cut out by the commissioner, allegedly because there's not enough money. He's closed also 300 contact stations around the country. Now, some of these contact stations are in remote sites where people will no longer have any ability to access the Social Security Administration. We have two islands in the Pacific that have contact stations. Those people would have to fly to Hawaii to get service. We have five contact stations in remote areas in Alaska that he's ordered closed, where those people, there's not even roads that lead to other cities, like in Nome or Barrow, Alaska, where we have somebody go there once a quarter or once every 6 months to deal with the face-to-face needs of that population. Now, this is dangerous stuff. That the Social Security has always allowed people to, understanding the nature of our population, our constituents who are senior citizens and disabled people, and they interact with us at vulnerable times. Many of those individuals feel the need to have a face-to-face contact in order to do their business. And if you take that away, it's really taking away a right, we think, that they have to access this agency to get the benefits that they're due.
Witold Skwierczynski, president of AFGE's National Council of Field Operations Locals, as always, thank you for your time.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll learn more about workplace issues at SSA with AFGE's Council 109 President Agatha Joseph from the Program Service Centers.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Agatha Joseph, president of AFGE Council 109, the Program Service Centers here at the Social Security Administration. Agatha, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
First time with us here. We're at SSA headquarters recording today, and you just came out of a long meeting with management. Tell us how that went today.
I think the meeting started off very productively. I have my apprehensions as to some of the issues that we raised. We had a number of issues that range from refresher training to the agency looking at the goals and the stress, and also addressing the issues of some of our backlog cases, as well as making sure that the agency would change their goals as far as the budget shortfalls that we are under at this period of time.
To change some of those goals related to the budget, how would you like to see that done?
The end result would they have to take in consideration the shortfalls that they are operating under and not have the same performance goals that employees are now under at this period of time.
When we spoke to your colleagues, Mr. Tucker, Mr. Skierczynski, and Mr. Marshall, a common theme has come up here, and you've already mentioned it, and that is the stress of the employees. Talk about that stress and the impact that it's having.
Well, one of the things dealing with the stress, because we just came out from under this furlough scare, is that employees are not sure what the budget is going to hold for them. There's a lot of apprehension of whether working for the government is a good place to work for, and that in the future, what the future is going to hold for them.
Do you find people questioning whether they've made the right decision to enter into public service?
Yes. One of the things that they have shared with me is that when they took this job, it was the fact that they needed a job, and they were told during the orientation period that they would have a future with the agency, and now everything is up in arms because for this year and maybe in the future years, they're not sure whether they're going to have a job.
So the threat of being furloughed, of actually losing your job, is something that people are paying attention to.
Yes, and the fact that the agency has, well, the administration has gone on record in saying that their cost of living is going to be frozen. They're going to look at the retirement years that it would take in order for them to be fully vested. And so there's a big question mark as even what would happen with their health benefits.
And so with the increased workloads that employees are under, higher goals, a lot more stress, but also the uncertainty of where their job might be in 2 years or 5 years or 10 years down the road, what has that done to the morale of the agency and the people that you represent?
People are in a panicky state. You know, in the past, there was rumors of war, and the war never happened. Well, now it's right here. And so they're saying this is a reality. They've got a reality check. So they're asking the union to, you know, to ask the legislation to make sure that they have jobs in the future. And they are coming out fighting with us as far as rallies, petitions, phone calls. They just want somebody to give them a lifesaver to assure that they will have a job in the future.
As a leader within AFGE Social Security Council, how do you respond to those employee concerns?
I ask them to come and join us, whether we do rallies, whether we do picketing, to make sure that they get in contact with their congressional and senatorial leaders to write letters, to get out there and fight with us, join us, whether it's, you know, and we have, our organizing numbers have gone up because people know that they have a vested interest in being involved in the union. They're also looking at the fact that they know the union is trying to save their jobs.
Do you think that the public recognizes what's at stake here? People who may not have any work relationship to Social Security, but maybe depend on a public service, maybe Social Security, maybe something else like Medicare or Medicaid. Do you think that the public really understands what's at stake here?
I think we do an education piece, but I think our people that live in the communities, they have to educate them. One of the things that people have told me, one of the three agencies that you go to in your lifetime is internal revenue, because you have to pay taxes, the postal services, because you have to, you know, mail something, and Social Security.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Agatha Joseph, president of AFGE Council 109 Program Service Centers. Agatha, if you could, take the audience through what it's like to work in a program service center and what the function of the office is.
Okay, the program center is a large payment center where we have a number of modules where they're units where people do everything from claims and appeals. They make sure that the adjudication of their benefits are processed. They assure the public, whether on the telephone or through a letter, that their payments have been effectuated. And they work closely with the field offices if there's any discrepancy or any exception of why the claim cannot be paid. They're an expediting unit to make sure that the payments go out in a timely manner.
Over the years, can you share with the audience how the workload has increased in your office?
Well, the workload has increased because the number of employees have been diminished. And even with the systems enhancement, it creates more work. If you don't have the number of bodies to do the work, and the agency has been very creative in having people act as, say, an 800 number agents in order to help out the teleservice centers. So there's a double duty, and you have to assure that these jobs are done because the American public depends upon you.
And when you talk to management and you express your concerns, how are they whenever you bring up the idea of training, more training? Because it seems like staffing may not ever come around to where it should be, at least in the short term, with freezes and cuts and whatnot. But are they receptive to training employees?
Well, we're not sure at this point. We have had some limited training, but we've asked them to assure, because one of the things that we're stressing is that if you don't give the people the training, the tools that they need in order to do a good job, then the quality of the product that we are producing is not going to be good, and then the American public is not going to be satisfied.
And on that piece of the American public not being satisfied, talk a little bit about how a stressed out employee or a high workload or unrealistic goals ultimately will impact the public services.
Well, when you're under repeated stress, it has a adverse effect on your health, your mental and physical health. You know, people have been programmed that they want to do the best job that they can. When they're limited, then it has to do with the fact that they're more frustrated and not being able to produce the work that they have been, they're being paid to do.
So to get the results that you're looking for, one part of it is to go to management and express your concerns, but another is to try to convince legislators on Capitol Hill to make a change in the way the law is. How is that going?
I think it's slow. I think we made some inroads in some areas, but I think it's slow because I think during this period of my life, I think this is a climate that we're in that the union and federal employees are looked upon as the enemy. We're looked upon as being un-American, and that should never happen, because the union has been there and the federal employees have been there to make sure that we service the American public.
How do we change that perception?
I think it's the education process, and I think that we have to let the American people know that these are programs, as one of the richest westernized countries, that we have to provide for the people who can least provide for themselves.
Agatha Joseph, president of AFGE Council 109's Program Service Centers and the Social Security Administration, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you to our guests this week, leaders of AFGE's SSA General Committee, Earl Tucker, Jim Marshall, Witold Skwierczynski, and Agatha Joseph. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife.